problems at the Veterans Affairs Department continue to unfold. Meanwhile, the largest civilian agency lacks a Senate-confirmed leader. Now, we've seen this pattern before. Troubled agency, departed leadership. Some come roaring back, some limp along. For how VA can shape a promising future, we turn to John Paul Guda, Vice President for Policy at the Partnership for Public Service. Hi, John.
Good morning, Emily and Tom.
So, John, the Acting Secretary Sloan Gibson is continuing his tour of VA facilities, and he's in Baltimore today. It raises the question, how much can VA do under Gibson, who is acting?
Well, I think there's actually a lot that can be done. I've met Sloan Gibson. I think he's going to be very focused on this. And he actually just recently announced that he is going to one of his actions will be to ensure that employees can come forward and share information about problems and not suffer reprisal for doing so. Now, of course, the acting secretary is going to have to have some help in being able to follow through on that pledge, and you know, he's got some issues to overcome. What we've seen going on right now, Emily and Tom, is that in this we have agreement in Congress, and I think in generally, that yes, something went wrong at VA, and we need to fix it, and that employees have to be part of that fix. So we've got agreement there. Where we don't have agreement is on how do we create accountability within the workforce. An acting secretary, even a confirmed secretary, can't manage that massive department alone. They have to have this culture of accountability within the department. Now, one of the things we saw was this kind of knee-jerk reaction of, well, let's make it easier to fire employees, and that's going to create more accountability. People will fear for their jobs, and so they'll do the right thing. What we know from past experience, unfortunately, is that in government in particular, which has a political overlay, if you don't have a process for making sure that employees are being fired for the right reasons, you could actually discourage employees from coming forward. And we've got a long history here in research on what encourages employees to come forward and blow the whistle, if you will, and what discourages them. So I think there's actually five things that Sloan Gibson, the acting VA secretary, five things that he can do in his top leadership team.
And I think we're going to start with number one, aren't we?
That's a good place to start, Tom. So number one, I think, would be to retain and enforce protection from reprisal for those who expose problems. And as I said, he's already pledged to do that. So that's number one. Number two, let's not forget that employees who cannot or will not perform at an acceptable level, and in this case, that means providing needed care within acceptable timeframes to veterans, that those employees do need to be removed. This is not, let's protect, people who aren't doing the job, but it's let's make sure that if we're going to remove folks, that, again, they're being removed for the right reasons. And that includes our senior executives. I think the McCain-Sanders bill, retained some due process protections for senior executives. And I think that's an important thing. Number three, ensure transparency. Having clear and verifiable metrics that are public, in the case of VA, real wait times that are out there. We know how long it's taking, and we know there. We've got some safeguards against making up this data. That can be important. Another metric is the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey results. I noticed in last year, only about 57% of employees said that they felt they could disclose a violation of law, rule, or regulation without fear of reprisal, and that was below the government-wide average. So that's a metric to watch going forward. I know the FEVS survey has just been concluded, and I think next month We're going to see some results.
And those don't get changed in a year anyway. I mean, that's a long-term effort to get those scores up.
Absolutely. So, but we have benchmarks here, and so you know that's going to be part of that metric. So that's number three, ensuring transparency on what's really going on, so that you know the public and the policymakers have a clear idea. The fourth out of five is to, you know, we focus so much on folks who are screwing up. Let's recognize and celebrate those who are doing the right thing, which I think is the vast majority of employees. Publicly recognize employees doing the right things, also to identify and fix problems. So if somebody comes forward, and even if the information's embarrassing, but if they're telling the truth to power and they're talking about what's going wrong, recognizing them and thanking them for their contribution on being part of the solution, I think will encourage other employees to come forward. And then the last thing that I think the acting secretary and the leadership team can do to create this culture of accountability, and this is something, Tom and Emily, that I learned when I was back at the Merit Systems Protection Board and doing research on whistleblowing. We surveyed a ton of employees, asking them, you know, were they aware of information that, involved fraud, waste, mismanagement, what have you? And if yes, did they share it? And if they said no, if they were aware of information, but they did not share it, we asked why. Well, fear of reprisal was not the number one reason they did not come forward. The number one reason was they did not believe anything would be done. If they came forward with information about something going wrong, they were not confident that anything would be done, so why bother?
So it's really about walking the walk and not just talking the talk, because all leaders say they want employees to report waste, fraud, and abuse, and yet we find out repeatedly in these instances that employees knew all along there were major problems with systems, whether it's VA or something else, and you wonder why nobody said anything.
That absolutely, Emily. And so walking the talk, not only celebrating those who come forward, but doing something about the problem. That's going to encourage, more than anything, employees to be part of the solution. It's like, hey, not only do they want to know about this, but they're going to try to address it. And if they're smart, if management is smart, they're going to ask employees to be part of that solution, to say, okay, what can we do to reduce wait times? Is there something besides, you know, more resources? Can we engineer the system somehow?
And so, John, real quickly, I mean, what you've said in your 5 points really gets to the heart of the whole matter. There was a 14-day wait time metric. It was ballooning out to, you know, a year and a half or a year or never in the case of 64,000. And so somehow people then, I guess, need to understand that if it gets beyond 2 weeks and gets to be to a month or 2 months, that they can raise their hand and say, we need some help here, as opposed to worrying about losing their job because the metric is going out of kilter for some reason. Maybe they can control, maybe they can't.
Absolutely, Tom. We've got agreement. There's a problem, and it needs to be fixed. Being careful in establishing that culture of accountability and getting employees involved and making sure they feel that they can be part of fixing things is going to be a large part of the future solution.
All right, we've got your 5 points on a piece of cardboard. The carrier pigeon is running it down to Vermont Avenue right now, and it's going to drop it on Sloan Gibson's desk. John Palguda is Vice President for Policy at the Partnership for Public Service. John, as always, thanks for joining us.
Tom and Emily, my pleasure. Thank you.